This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 5th of May, 2021. And a very interesting set of developments yesterday. We already had a market that was under pressure. We've been talking a little bit about momentum rolling over, particularly in the NASDAQ 100. And then we have a very odd happening yesterday where you have a former Fed chair, Yellen, and current, of course, U.S. Treasury Secretary out saying that interest rates may have to rise because of the risk of the economy overheating. That really set things on edge. The broader market was under a little bit less pressure than the more concentrated NASDAQ 100. And then basically everything came unglued after those comments. Later, she was out sort of retracting and clarifying these comments, but the damage was kind of done, even though if you look at where the price action started, and if you look at something like the S&P futures, most of the damage was actually retraced post her clarifications. But still, by the end of the day, if you look at something like the NASDAQ 100, as we have on slide two, we pretty thoroughly rolled over after breaking through that that pivot low, well below the 21-day moving average. There's talk of some of these sort of gamma flip things happening. In other words, when the gamma in the options market requires that suddenly market makers need to sell rather than buy. So I would argue, just from the technical standpoint, this 13,350 area to 300, that previous pivot high, will be the next focus, and then 12,900, the next Fibonacci retracement, as you can see on that chart. And then final note, before I turn it over to you, Peter, and there's really interesting, we've talked about this before, crazy divergence in some of the internals here, but just want on the headline still and the technicals, look at slide three, the weekly, that divergent momentum, which is inevitable at some point when you have such a crazy high MACD readings, is starting to get confirmed with this sell-off with a much lower MACD at that price high. So let's see where things stand. But certainly, Peter, very nervous market. I looked over at something like Dow Theory. Dow Transports almost made a new high for the cycle yesterday. So we're not getting confirmation from something like that. But this is there's some really weak sectors in this market.
Yeah, and that's very evident on slide four. You can see the only performing sector yesterday or theme basket was the commodity sector. That's always cheering and with good reasons, because that's where the price action is. And what I found interesting about yesterday was that you had all the most interest rate sensitivity themes and what we call long duration assets, because of the value is derived from cash flow expectations far into the future. So, next gen medicine, green transformation and bubble stocks, e-commerce to some extent as well. And those were really leading the declines. And also, if you look at the basket's performance yesterday, that was what I said to you, John, you can see there are some pockets which are heavily down, almost 10%. And then you have another pockets of the market that is up. So the breadth of the market is not terribly good here. But I think yesterday's price action with very minimal, I would say, price reaction in interest rates, despite of Yellen's comments, but you're seeing this magnitude of move in the interest rate sensitivity themes, is a suggestion to me that the market, at least the equity market, is now seriously beginning to worry about inflation. And I think the bigger question is that you have all these companies that have been out revising up their outlook for the year, and they have been smashing estimates. So analysts have been way too conservative here on Q1, potentially Q2 numbers. And now companies potentially is getting too overconfident on the profitability in the second half of the year. And I think the big joke is that, and we don't know that, I'm pretty humble about that, we don't know how exactly the rising inflationary pressures will impact margins. But I've put in here on slide four, a quick chart I did this morning where I've put in the MSCI World EBITDA margin. So basically, the operating margin before depreciation and amortizations, et cetera, and interest payments. And you can see it's not like we're running at stellar operating margins in the world. We did have much better margins prior to the financial crisis. But if inflation hits hard, when potentially we could have operating margins in the global equity market being the worst since 1995. And I think that would be a big story, because that will act as a headwind for earnings growth into the future.
Yeah, you bring in interest rates. And the interest rate reaction was quite strong initially. So we saw those comments on rate hikes leading to the risk off, and then you saw the expected Treasury rally that was neutralized as well. So pretty much flat on treasuries. And I think really key to see treasury volatility pick up to get volatility feeding through a bit more across asset classes from this. So FX volatility, for example, was very muted yesterday. But over the, you know, in commodities, we have the commodity prices on, you know, a lot of areas, but gold was once again, just, you know, we were trying to break higher and now the deflation just comes once again here. Take us through that. And then as well, your overlook here on this latest commodity surge.
Yeah, it was a strange day for both gold and silver yesterday. We've had this run up over the past few days. And once again, if you look at the chart of the gold, we have now five times out of the last, during the past 2 weeks, been rejected at the 1800 level. So obviously a key level to watch out for. What I think is somewhat disappointing in the behavior after the announcement was the fact that the dollar didn't really do much and real yields actually dropped even further. So
which sort of supported this 1800 break potentially.
Exactly, because because at the flip side of that was the break evens, i.e. inflation expectations were going up. So you just asked, kind of wondering if gold can't rally under these circumstances, what can really trigger it? So one thing is clear that we've been in a downtrend since August. We need to break well above 1800, really start to, in order to start to rattle some of those shorts. So for now, we're stuck with still this key level around the 1765 as a level that needs to hold. But the whole inflation story is one that's, as Peter mentioned, the equity market is starting to take note. We've been seeing that in the commodity space now for quite some time. On slide five, you can just see some of the year-on-year changes. This is not, I've just kind of evened out a little bit, just taking the year-on-year change of the 1 month average. So we don't, because obviously we had some phenomenal moves just last year, but it tells quite a clear picture that we are seeing a very strong surge. The Bloomberg Spot Index, commodity spot index, is up around 60% year on year. And you can see some of the gains we've had since the latest acceleration, which started back in November when we had the first vaccine announcement. We had Biden moving into the White, or getting the White House. And some of these gains are just phenomenal. And it is just across all sectors. We've got the growth sitting on top of everything, the growth accelerating right now. We've got weather worries supporting the agricultural space, a lot of speculation coming into the market. So paper investment, the part of that is also the reflation. You're looking for an inflation hedge, and commodity space is a key destination for those kind of flows. And then we also got bottlenecks just generally across the global transportation system, which is raising local prices.
Don't you think with the whole gold, I mean, the gold price reaction was actually quite strong in the early parts, the first half of the year, last year. And at that point in time, you had the debasement talks and all the increase in the money supply, and crypto was doing nothing over that period, just flat. And then when we got into October last year, suddenly crypto took off. And I'm just wondering, sitting with, as a layman in equities land here, watching commodities, only of course listening to you every day, but I'm just thinking that it's gold's biggest competitor must be crypto.
I actually brought that same point into the conversation, that same question in the conversation on a recent podcast, whether that is proving a distraction. I have to imagine it is. When you look at something like an Ethereum chart, especially, I would imagine the younger traders out there looking, you know, what is this crazy physical metal stuff? Why am I going to waste my time with that?
Yeah.
And prior to that, something like silver was a favorite speculative metal because it's just very volatile. So you get some big moves quite often by quite a factor to what's happening in gold. And I think you also mentioned last week, Peter, if you are an investment manager and you need to add additional, maybe another percent into alternative investments, are you putting into gold? Are you putting into cryptos with all the craze going on right now? You obviously don't want to be looked like an idiot, be left out. So you are going into cryptos instead of precious metals.
Great points there. And it'd be interesting to see if the correlation, to do a correlation tracking on that to see if it goes to negative, if volatility picks up in either space further, especially downside volatility, obviously, in crypto, if that ever materializes. Just very briefly, just to indicate where we were with reactions across markets, I mentioned that the longer-term treasuries did try to rally quite a bit, and then that move was neutralized. If you look at the actual movements sort of out next year, when that sort of trigger area where the market is trying to figure out when the Fed will actually hike rates, sort of the June to September timeframe, there was almost no reaction at all. We're still at the low end of expectations. You can see on slide six that took the September 22 Eurodollar short-term interest rate contract. We're still at the low end of the price. There is at the high end, but that means the low end of rate expectations. And I think that could be in for an adjustment here if we're seeing some of these inflation prints that we suspect are coming. Could it come as soon as the June FOMC meeting, or is it not something that will be flagged until we have, let's call it, 3 months of data in the bag and something that's, that's waived at the Jackson Hole conference later in the summer or something else? Worth considering, there are different Eurodollar strategies where you can do options on the movements, where we don't have to have an options expiry all the way out into September of next year, but over the coming weeks. Just something to look into if that is an interest for speculating on the direction of U.S. interest rates. And then in the FX space, the overview on slide 7. So Eurodollar looks like it's pressing on 120. We had the ECB out showing it as very much still in the buying of front-loading its asset purchases. And as well, Bunds suffering quite a setback yield-wise, much bigger move than we saw in the U.S. So that spread eroding in favor of the U.S. dollar. 120 is falling and fell sort of before, just before we were coming into this recording. 119.80 is a minor area, and I was to say the bigger area is 118.75. And I would like to start looking at accumulating Eurodollar at some point, but if we have a bigger risk downdraft, we could be looking at it going all the way back towards those cycle lows. And then elsewhere with this commodity theme, commodity strength theme, you're seeing, just very weak directional reactivity to what's going on. So Aussie dollar sold off yesterday, went right to the 76.75 area support, and then bounced right back into the range as soon as the sort of selling pressure eased. So it looks like we need something more profound here, and maybe even some sell-off in some of these commodities to get these traditionally risk-sensitive FX currencies to sell off. And then on the momentum picture, it's just a really mixed picture there at the moment. I don't think I can really pull much out of that, except for the dollar, the dollar momentum changing quite to the positive here. All right, to round out the commodity space, Ulla, we have copper prices. We've talked so much about that. The key supply comes from Chile and Peru, and you were mentioning something about there's some regulatory risks, but some government risks. Absolutely. Around this that are novel, not just about simple supply and demand, but this added layer of risk.
That's true, but first and foremost, what's driving the market right now is clearly still the green transformation theme. The prospect for increased demand for copper as we electrify the world over the coming years and decades, and just phenomenal momentum, which is supporting as well. Yesterday, we overnight we breached that key psychological $10,000 level in LME copper. So it obviously interesting to see whether it can hold here. But it's interesting as well, because from the physical market, this seems like that we're starting to see more signs of buyer strike at these elevated prices. If you look at the tightness in the market, it's not really there right now. We don't have much of a back in terms of backwardation in the, especially in LME copper. That's also a short-term sign that maybe some of these markets more driven by speculative interest more than actual physical demand. So that's one we need to keep an eye on. But as you mentioned, John, there are Peru and Chile. They account for 42% of global supply of copper, and Chile by far the biggest of them. They're currently discussing a new tax proposal, which basically would introduce a progressive tax rate on revenues from copper. It could go all the way up to 75% marginal tax rate, basically at different price levels. Currently, if based on current prices, that tax would go from 3% currently to up to 27%. So the mining industry is clearly saying that if this is introduced, it will impact the investment flow going forward, because it would obviously remove the cash from the mining companies. So that potentially could be a worry for supply into a decade where demand is going to be very strong. So it's not one for now, but if it's introduced, it may not happen until 24, but still it is something that the market will keep an eye on.
All right. And then we have in the equity space with all this hullabaloo and volatility, we still have some very interesting earnings rolling in. Take us through the latest there, Peter.
Yeah. So we're still picking up some speed here. Today and tomorrow will be the big days. And then, of course, we have Friday. We still have Siemens and BMW, as we've marked there on slide 9 in red. We have had Novo Nordisk reporting this morning a little bit better than expected, lifting their growth target for this year by 1 percentage point on constant FX terms. Vestas, which I've highlighted today, is looking ugly technically, but also in its Q1 earnings this morning, it's actually slipping. It's posting an operating loss despite a profit expected, but they're keeping their guidance. But you're still looking at a company, as you can see here on the small share price insert. It's just trading 100% above its pre-COVID 19 levels, and that's obviously because of all the stimulus and the green transformation. But I'm still wondering how much patience there will be in the market for Vestas, because if you take the revenue expectation and their EBIT margin expectation, and you multiply the two numbers, you're getting at a number that is still not a new record for Vestas over the past 5 or 6 years, and still the stock is 100% higher. So obviously huge expectations for what the green transformation will mean for Vestas. So we're tracking that, and I'll be writing about the green transformation basket and what's happening there in my update today. And then maybe I just want to highlight as well, PayPal, Uber, and Booking as one of the companies that we're tracking in the US session. PayPal for the technology sentiment, as well with Uber, which is potentially, you know, the potential impact for the bubble stocks basket right there. And then I should close my remarks with a small comment on AP Moller Maersk. They are still seeing strong 5 to 7% global trade growth this year. Still expectations of strong and high elevated container freight prices for at least a year. And then they have also made this strategic decision that Maersk wants to be more than just a shipping line with an extensive network. They want to be a more bigger logistic company. And I think they're looking at DSV, which I mentioned last week, which I basically said I think could become the world's biggest logistic company because of their excellent operating model and their stellar performance. And I think Maersk are looking at this because they're saying in their comment this morning on the earnings that they're going to focus and invest much more heavily on their land-based logistics business and not their container business. I don't know what that means for prices going forward, but I'll let you out there decide that. But I think that's a little bit odd. But yeah,
as an acquisition target, then looking at DSV,
maybe, yeah,
maybe. All right, let's go to the macro calendar. We got a couple of key data points up today. The ADP private payrolls change will be up earliest at 12:15. That's expected at 850K. I'm really interested to see how the market absorbs data today after all the back and forth. And then that recent ISM manufacturing with a combination of a weaker headline with a very, very hot prices paid index hit the markets the day before yesterday. So the ISM services up today expected at a new all-time high. That prior March number at 63.7 was already the highest level in the nearly 25-year history of that survey. It's expected to notch a little bit higher, still suggesting a very, very fast improvement at an even faster rate than the prior month. And then buttressing that expectation was the fact that the flash April market services PMI, the one coming up there at 1345 GMT, did come in at a strong new high relative to a very strong March. So, you know, we all know this is strong data. Even if it is print strong, how does the market treat it? Does it shrug it off? How do treasuries react? Is the market concerned that this is a brief, a massive stimulus period from the stimulus checks, et cetera, that will fade quickly? Or do we get the market, you know, reading this at face value and yield curves steepening again and treasuries selling off? All key across all asset classes, how the treasury market absorbs this data. And then finally, Brazil's central bank out later today, much later today. They are expected to hike by 0.75% to 3.5%. Amazing that rate ever got down below 3% in Brazil, but there you have it. With that, we're calling it a day. We'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.